Chapter 5 96529Q
"Hold it, hold it," Connecticut State Trooper Warren Hamilton said in a loud voice, although he was the only one in the cruiser. It was the evening of June 2nd, some 35 hours after the discovery of Homer Gamache's body in a Maine town Trooper Hamilton had never heard of. He was in the lot of the Westport I-95 McDonald's, southbound. He made it a habit to swing into the lots of the food and gas stops when he was cruising the interstate. If you crawled up the last row of the parking spots at night with your lights off, you sometimes made some good busts. Better than good. Awesome. When he sensed he might have come upon such an opportunity, he very often talked to himself. These soliloquies often started with, "Hold it, hold it," then progressed to something like, "Let's check this sucker out," or, "Ask Mama if she believes this." Trooper Hamilton was very big on asking Mama if she believed this when he was on the scent of something juicy. "What have we got here?" he murmured this time, and reversed the cruiser. Past a Camaro, past a Toyota which looked like a slowly aging horse turd in the beaten copper glare of the arc sodium lights, and, ta-da, an old GMC pickup truck that looked orange in the glare, which meant it was, or had been, white or light gray. He popped his spotlight and trained it on the license plate. License plates, in Trooper Hamilton's humble opinion, were getting better. One by one, the states were putting little pictures on them. This made them easier to identify at night, when varying light conditions transformed actual colors into all sorts of fictional hues. And the worst light of all for plate ID were these goddamn orange high-intensity lamps. He didn't know if they foiled rapes and muggings as they were designed to do, but he was positive they had caused hard-working cops such as himself to bugger plate IDs on stolen cars and fugitive vehicles without number. The little pictures went a long way toward fixing that. A Statue of Liberty was a Statue of Liberty in both bright sunlight and the steady glare of these copper-orange bastards. And no matter what the color, Lady Liberty meant New York. Same as that fucked-up crawdaddy he had the spot trained on right now meant Maine. You didn't have to strain your eyes for vacation land anymore, or try to figure out if what looked pink or orange or electric blue was really white. You just looked for the fucked-up crawdaddy. It was really a lobster, Hamilton knew that. But a fucked-up crawdaddy by any other name was still a fucked-up crawdaddy, and he would have gobbled shit right out of a pig's ass before he put one of those fucking crawdads in his mouth. But he was mighty glad they were there all the same. Especially when he had a want on a crawdaddy license plate, as he did tonight. "Ask Mama if she believes this," he murmured, and put the cruiser in park. He took his clipboard from the magnetized strip which held it to the center of the dash just above the drive shaft hump, flipped past the blank citation form all cops kept as a shield over the hot sheet. No need for the general public to be gawking at the license plate numbers the cops were particularly interested in, while the cop to whom the sheet belonged was grabbing a hamburger or taking an express dump at a handy filling station. And ran his thumbnail down the list. And here it was, 96529Q, State of Maine, home of the fucked-up crawdaddies. Trooper Hamilton's initial pass had shown him no one was in the cab of the truck. There was a rifle rack, but it was empty. It was possible, not likely, but possible, that there might be someone in the bed of the truck. It was even possible that the someone in the bed of the truck might have the rifle which belonged in the rack. More likely, the driver was either long gone or grabbing a burger inside. All the same, "Old cops, bold cops, but no old bold cops," Trooper Hamilton said in a low voice. He snapped off the spot and slowly cruised on down the line of cars. He paused twice more, snapping the spot on both times, although he didn't even bother to look at the cars he was lighting up. There was always the possibility that Mr. 96529Q had seen Hamilton spotlighting the stolen truck while on his way back from the restaurant Cum Dumpatorium, and if he saw the trooper car had passed on up the line and was checking other cars, he might not take off. "Safe is safe, sorry is sorry, and that's all I know, by the great by gory," Trooper Hamilton exclaimed. This was another of his favorites, not quite up there with asking Mama if she believed this, but close. He pulled into a slot where he could observe the pickup. He called his base, which was less than 4 miles up the road, and told them he had found the GMC pickup Maine wanted in a murder case. He requested backup units and was told they would arrive shortly. Hamilton observed no one approaching the pickup and decided it would not be overbold to approach the vehicle with caution. In fact, he would look like a wimp if he was still sitting here in the dark one row over when the other units arrived. He got out of his cruiser, thumbing the strap off his gun but not unholstering it. He had unholstered his piece only twice while on duty and fired it not at all. Nor did he want to do either one now. He approached the pickup at an angle that allowed him to observe both the truck, especially the bed of the truck, and the approach from Mickey D's. He paused as a man and woman walked from the restaurant to a Ford sedan three rows closer to the restaurant, then moved on when they got in their car and headed for the exit. Keeping his right hand on the butt of his service revolver, Hamilton dropped his left hand to his hip. Service belts, in Hamilton's humble opinion, were also getting better. He had, both as man and boy, been a huge fan of Batman, a.k.a. the Caped Crusader. He suspected, in fact, that the Batman was one of the reasons he had become a cop. This was a little factoid he hadn't bothered to put on his application. His favorite Batman accessory had not been the Batpole or the Batarang, not even the Batmobile itself, but the Caped Crusader's utility belt. That wonderful item of apparel was like a good gift shop. It had a little something for all occasions, be it a rope, a pair of night vision goggles, or a few capsules of stun gas. His service belt was nowhere near as good, but on the left side there were three loops holding three very useful items. One was a battery-powered cylinder marketed under the name Downhound. When you pressed the red button on top, Downhound emitted an ultrasonic whistle that turned even raging pit bulls into bowls of limp spaghetti. Next to it was a pressure can of mace, the Connecticut State Police version of Batman's stun gas, and next to the mace was a 4-cell flashlight. Hamilton pulled the flashlight from its loop, turned it on, then slid his left hand up to partially hood the beam. He did this without once removing his right hand from the butt of his revolver. Old cops, bold cops, but no old bold cops. He ran the beam along the bed of the pickup truck. There was a scrap of tarpaulin in there, but nothing else. The truck bed was as empty as the cab. Hamilton had remained a prudent distance away from the GMC with the crawdaddy plates all the while. This was so ingrained he hadn't even thought about it. Now he bent and shone the flashlight beneath the truck, the last place where someone who meant him harm might be lurking. Unlikely, but when he finally kicked off, he didn't want the minister to begin his eulogy by saying, "Dear friends, we are here today to mourn the unlikely passing of Trooper Warren Hamilton." That would be tray tacky. He swept the beam quickly left to right under the truck and observed nothing but a rusty muffler which was going to drop off in the near future. Not from the look of the holes in it that the driver would notice much difference when it did. "I think we're alone, dear," Trooper Hamilton said. He examined the area surrounding the truck one final time, paying particular attention to the approach from the restaurant. He observed no one observing him, and so stepped up to the passenger window of the cab and shone his light inside. "Holy shit," Hamilton murmured. "Ask Mama if she believes this happy crappy." He was suddenly very glad for the orange lamps, which sent their glare across the parking lot and into the cab, because they turned what he knew was maroon to a color which was almost black, making the blood look more like ink. He drove it like that? Jesus Christ, all the way from Maine, he drove it like that? Ask Mama? He tipped his flashlight downward. The seat and the floor of the GMC was a sty. He saw beer cans, soft drink cans, empty or near-empty potato chip and pork rind bags, boxes which had contained Big Macs and Whoppers. A wad of what looked like bubblegum was squashed onto the metal dashboard above the hole where there had once been a radio. There were a number of unfiltered cigarette butts in the ashtray. Most of all, there was blood. There were streaks and blotches of blood on the seat. Blood was grimed into the steering wheel. There was a dried splatter of blood on the horn ring, almost entirely obscuring the Chevrolet symbol embossed there. There was blood on the driver's inside door handle and blood on the mirror. That spot was a small circle that wanted to be an oval, and Hamilton thought that Mr. 96529Q might have left an almost perfect thumbprint in his victim's blood when he adjusted his rear view. There was also a large splatter of gore on one of the Big Mac boxes. That one looked like there might be some hair stuck in it. "What did he tell the drive-up girl?" Hamilton muttered. "He cut himself shaving?" There was a scraping noise behind him. Hamilton whirled, feeling too slow, feeling all too sure that he had, despite his routine precautions, been too bold to ever get old, because there was nothing routine about this. No, sir, the guy had gotten behind him, and soon there would be more blood in the cab of the old Chevrolet pickup. His blood, because a guy who would drive a portable abattoir like this from Maine almost to the New York state line was a psycho. The sort of guy who would kill a state trooper with no more thought than he'd take to buy a quart of milk. Hamilton drew his revolver for the third time in his career, thumbed the hammer back, and almost triggered a shot, or two or three, into nothing but darkness. He was wired to the max, but there was no one there. He lowered the gun by slow degrees, blood thumping in his temples. A little gust of wind puffed the night. The scraping noise came again. On the pavement, he saw a filet-o-fish box. From this very McDonald's, no doubt. "How clever you are, Holmes. Do not mention it, Watson. It was really elementary." Skitter 5 or 6 feet at the whim of the breeze, and then come to rest again. Hamilton let out a long, shaky breath and carefully dropped the hammer on his revolver. "Almost embarrassed yourself there, Holmes," he said in a voice that was not at all steady. "Almost stuck yourself with a CR-14. A CR-14 was a shots-fired form. He thought about holstering his gun again, now that it was clear there was nothing to shoot but an empty fish sandwich box, and then decided he would just hold on to it until he saw the other units arriving. It felt good in his hand, comforting. Because it wasn't just the blood, or the fact that the man some Maine cop wanted for murder had driven 400 miles or so in that mess. There was a stench around the truck, which was in a way like the stench around the spot in some country road where a car has hit and crushed a skunk. He didn't know if the arriving officers would pick it up or if it was just for him, and he didn't much care. It wasn't a smell of blood or rotten food or B.O. It was, he thought, just the smell of bad. Something very, very bad. Bad enough so that he didn't want to holster his revolver, even though he was almost positive that the owner of that smell was gone, probably hours ago. He heard none of the ticking noises which came from an engine that was still warm. It didn't matter. It didn't change what he knew. For a while, the truck had been the den of some terrible animal, and he wasn't going to take the slightest risk that the animal might return and find him unprepared. And Mama could make book on that. He stood there, gun in hand, hairs on the back of his neck prickling, and it seemed a very long time before the backup units finally came.